Headline number one, Elon Musk tweeted, then revised Tesla's financial guidance he probably shouldn't have. And in our second headline, Deutsche Bank takes a $1.6 billion loss, that is billion with a B, on a bond bet. Those two headlines, plus the big idea tying them all together, and much more on today's Money in the Morning. Welcome to Money in the Morning. I am Bobby Rebel from the Financial Grown Up Podcast, coming to you from my very grown up kitchen in New York City.
I'm Joe Salcihi from Stacky Benjamin's, live from my mom's half finished basement in Detroit, Michigan.
And this is the podcast where we cover two recent stories ripped from the financial press. We don't just read them like some other podcasts. We get into why they matter to you, to your wallet, to your money, and what you can do to use the lessons from the stories to invest, save, pay down debt more effectively, and all that good stuff. And then we wrap it all up into one big idea at the end of today's show so you can be better with your money for the rest of your day. Money in the Morning is brought to you by Tiller. Manage your money 10 times faster in a spreadsheet with Tiller, the only service that connects your banks to Google Sheets and Excel with your daily spending, transactions, and balances. Go to stackingbenjamins.com/Tiller for more information. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Bobby.
How are we doing today?
We're having a great day. For those of you that don't follow us live on Facebook, if you're listening to this later, this is recording attempt number 976, but we made it.
Because we do it all live.
Yes, we're here.
Live.
Happy Saturday. Happy weekend.
Yes, definitely happy weekend. Hopefully you are somewhere warm. Joe and I are both in very cold, cold places where we've had extremely chilly weather lately. Lots of fun weather patterns, but I don't know. I'm working on planning a trip in March somewhere warm.
That's always the first thing on your mind. I'm working on getting through the headlines today, and we've got some good ones.
Let's do it.
Just when you thought the show couldn't possibly get better, it's time for your headlines.
I thought that open was appropriate today because it definitely can only get better.
It can only get better. And we have a great story that we've got some special research I've done for that you guys will be very interested in. It is from CNBC. It is about our friend Elon Musk from Tesla. And the headline is, Elon Musk tweeted, then revised Tesla's financial guidance he probably shouldn't have. And the story, I should say, is written by Sarah Selina. So thank you, Sarah. All right. The posts seem unoffensive by Musk's standard, given his penchant for inflammatory tweets. But the incident raises questions about the effectiveness of an SEC fraud settlement and attempts to rein in Musk's online antics. Musk's tweets have proven to move the stock as much as 10% in some cases and invited a defamation lawsuit from a British rescue driver who sparred with Musk online. All right, here is, those were sort of the bullet points above. Here is the meat of the story. Elon Musk tweeted, then revised projections for full-year Tesla manufacturing numbers. The CEO said late Tuesday that Tesla would make around 500,000 vehicles in 2019, later clarifying he meant to say the company's annualized production rate at the end of 2019 could be around 500,000 vehicles or a production rate of 10,000 cars per week. Total deliveries for the year are still estimated at 400,000, Musk said. All right, here is the actual tweet that came out that he corrected it. Quote, this is the tweet from Elon Musk. Meant to say annualized production rate at end of 2019, probably around 500K, i.e. 10K cars per week. Deliveries for year still estimated to be about 400K. The posts seem unoffensive by Musk's standards, given his penchant for inflammatory tweets, blah, blah, blah. This part was in the bullet points that I read at the beginning. As part of the company's, so he's been in trouble for tweets before, and we're going to talk about Elon Musk's tweets in a moment. As part of the company's settlement with the SEC in September, which stemmed from a now infamous Musk tweet about taking the company private, again, we'll get to that soon, Tesla was supposed to create a system for monitoring Musk's statements to the public about the company, whether on Twitter, blog posts, or any other medium. And then we have just quickly an analyst commenting on it. His name is Gene Munster. Quote, it comes back to the company is still running like a startup. Loop Ventures founder Gene Munster told CNBC Squawk Box on Wednesday, this is a $50 to $60 billion market cap company. This should not be run like a startup. Joe?
No, I totally agree. When you run a company that big and you're tweeting numbers that are not correct and then going back and revising them in real time via Twitter, you've got to, I used to work with some of these people back when I was a financial planner. They were clients of mine, and they would talk about how they were PR people for the company. They work for some of the automotive companies, and they talk about the process they go through. And the CEO has to be very, very careful about what they say, because people like you and I may trade on that information. Like if we're just Joe Investor, I might hear Elon Musk say that number and go, wow, that sounds like a lot of cars. Looks like things are going great. I'm going to trade. And then 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, Musk takes it back.
And these tweets, you know, this is still public communication. And as long as, if I understand the law correctly, as long as it is publicly available to everyone, it is considered legitimate communication. So if you communicate, if you are in charge of a company and you're communicating like this, there are consequences if you do tweet things that are then proven to not be correct and you knowingly did so. I think that is something to be very careful about.
Dylan is hanging out with us on our Facebook Live. By the way, if you want to hang out with us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/iStackBenjamins. And we come on here 3 times a week to do the shows. But Dylan says, companies need to have a personal assistant who literally slaps the phone out of the hand of executives as they open Twitter. I think Tesla desperately needs that. I think, though, this has a lot more to do with our everyday lives than we think that it does. Because I've known people throughout my career, Bobby, who have said, well, you know what? I'm just pretty direct. And really what they're saying is, no, really, I'm just ruining my career because I don't have a filter, because I don't think before I talk.
Yeah, you have to be careful what you say, because it does have consequences, and even more so when you do it in writing on a public forum. And by the way, for people that do follow Elon Musk, I pulled up an interesting list from the Wall Street Journal of the CEOs that do the most tweeting. So according to the Wall Street Journal, the only CEO that tweets more than Elon Musk, Joe, do you want to give it a guess?
I was going to say,
that audience, I did not tell Joe I was going to ask him this and put him on the spot. Who do you think would be the CEO? It's a big company that tweets more than Elon Musk.
I was thinking it was a guy that used to run a company, kind of does still, that's the commander in chief of the United States. But
okay, no, I'm sorry. We're looking at CEOs of publicly traded companies. So his company was not publicly traded. Right. So that does not count. He was not eligible for this Wall Street Journal list.
Yeah, no idea.
All right, I'm looking. Does our audience have any ideas who this could be? I'm going to read some of the runner-ups just to see if they think of the number one guy. So the other top tweeters, along with Elon Musk from Tesla, include the CEOs of Cisco, Apple, Microsoft, and Amazon, although I don't think that they've gotten into as much trouble as Mr. Musk has.
The only guess in our Facebook Live was me. And I will say very publicly, I tweet very little, unfortunately.
All right. So the number one tweeter of CEOs, according to the Wall Street Journal, was actually Mark Benioff. I hope I pronounced his name correctly.
You did.
From Salesforce.
Yeah, sure.
He was the number one tweeter. So there you go.
But it's very difficult, because, and especially if you're not doing pre-programmed tweets, because of the fact that there's so many opportunities for you to make mistakes. I mean, there's so many opportunities for you to make a mistake on Twitter. It's incredibly difficult to nail. If you're talking a lot on Twitter, to nail the right tone, to make sure that you don't say something that's awkward. I mean, how many times have we seen somebody who puts a word in all caps in the wrong place, and it sounds like they're yelling at us? And I've done that before, where I was trying to do emphasis on one word, so I capitalized it. And I had a good friend of mine go, man, it just looked like you were angry. No.
That's true. Yes. And by the way, we do have a few more guesses from our Facebook Live audience of the top tweeting CEO. And I think Jack Dorsey would have been a good guess. I'm surprised, actually, that is not up there. That was from Dylan. And then Caden has Kylie Jenner. But I don't think that they are a publicly traded company, so therefore not eligible. And I think they're more on Instagram, actually, the Kardashians. So.
Yeah, Kimberly says, asks if it was a Kardashian. Mike is with us. He says Benioff's a good follow on Twitter. Yeah, but those are some. That's the way to look at somebody who does it well. Also, and Dylan said this. The guy from T-Mobile, the CEO of T-Mobile.
That's a good one too. Yeah. He may have been further down the list. I don't have the full list with me.
Yeah, those are good people to follow on Twitter. Good stuff.
All right. So I did promise everyone that I would get to the tweet that the story was referencing about taking Tesla private that Elon Musk got in so much trouble for. So I think we have some music. We're going to play that. I'm going to read that along with other of Elon Musk's greatest tweet hits.
Yeah, we should.
Greatest tweet hits from Elon Musk. We have a sampling.
I wish that we'd have Laura record like some open for this. So I'll do it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Bobby Reed's Elon Musk's greatest tweet hits.
All right. Back on August 7th, Elon Musk tweeted, quote, am considering taking Tesla private at $420. Funding secured. That, of course, came as shares were surging on news that Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund had built a roughly $2 billion stake in the company over the past few months. Now, then he doubles down a few hours later when he tweets, quote, investor support is confirmed. And then he wrote a blog post. And by the way, blogs have the same responsibility as tweets, explaining the context. Then, of course, the April Fool's joke on April 1st of 2018. Quote, Elon Musk's tweet said, Tesla goes bankrupt. Despite intense efforts to raise money, including a last-ditch mass sale of Easter eggs, we are sad to report that Tesla has gone completely and totally bankrupt. So bankrupt, you can't believe it. Mr. Musk also, Joe, enjoys responding directly to customers. On April 8th of 2018, Mathlete76 wrote to him, no, they're getting invited first. Online people with April, June are getting invited before day one. Reservation holders, I'm day one and I got inside the store at 12 p.m. Still no invite. Tons of us like this. And they get a personal answer, these customers. There are countless examples of these, Joe. Elon Musk responding directly to his customer on April 8th, quote, looking into it now. I feel very confident. Tesla when I hear right back from the CEO. He also is not afraid to throw some shade at other CEOs. Mark Zuckerberg had written to him. This is back from July 25th of 2017. In an article, they had said Zuckerberg blasts Elon Musk warnings against artificial intelligence as pretty irresponsible. That was in an article, not directly from Zuckerberg. And then Elon Musk, though, responds to that saying, quote, I've talked to Mark about this. His understanding of the subject is limited. How's that? There we go.
He got in a public fight. It didn't make your list, but remember, he got in a public fight back and forth with Warren Buffett once.
Did he? I did not catch that one. Yeah. I'll have to look for that for another time.
He was talking about growth. Buffett was talking about value, and he disagreed with Buffett, and it was kind of funny because in some ways they were both right. But yeah, who wins when you pick a fight with Warren Buffett publicly on Twitter?
I don't know, but I need to follow Warren Buffett. That's actually a good person that we should all probably follow, even though he wasn't a top tweeter. I wonder what his tweets are like.
No.
Probably pretty wise and well thought out, I have to believe.
Second on my list to following Bobby Rebell. That's like number one.
And so salty high. Average Joe money. Right.
Oh, good stuff. Tim says, can Elon Musk go private? He calls Musk a snake oil salesman standing in front of very intelligent people who actually do the work. What's funny is, Tim, is that you're right. He doesn't do a lot of the work. And even though sometimes he is a snake oil salesman, you can't doubt how brilliant the guy is. I mean, when you have as many hits as he's had and as many mm-hmm. intelligent things and intelligent people that he's worked around, you can't undersell the fact that while he's out there selling, to use Tim's word, still pretty intelligent guy doing some questionable stuff.
Yeah, well, I think it has to do with the lack of the filter for things like Twitter and other platforms, because he also writes blog posts. But in terms of his innovation and in terms of his enthusiasm, and also most of his stuff, as I understand it, is pretty much open source, which is also kind of nice because he's kind of inviting people along for the ride and sharing the things that he comes up with. So there's a lot of good stuff about Elon Musk, just, you know, filter. And that's our takeaway, right?
That is our takeaway. And it's from my mom, because I do my other podcast in mom's basement. And mom says, use your inside voice sometime. And I think sometimes maybe Elon and all of us should learn to apply a little filter. Use our inside voice. We don't have to say it out loud. Just no. Because you think it doesn't mean you have to say it.
Yes. And people can't read your mind. And you also will not get in trouble with the SEC if you keep it in your mind.
Right. Agreed. SEC has no idea what you're thinking.
No, you can think all kinds of silly thoughts. So, all right. Are we moving on to our second story? We want to take some audience comments.
Sounds good. I think we've had quite a few audience comments. So let's move ahead.
All right. Headline number two, Deutsche Bank takes a $1.6 billion loss on a bond investment. And this comes to us from MarketWatch, which, by the way, is a shortened version of the original Wall Street Journal story. So if you want to go and get even more information after the show on it, feel free to go to that. It's by the same authors, Gretchen Morgenson and Jenny Strausberg, who are both excellent writers. All right. Deutsche Bank racked up a loss of $1.6 billion, with a B, dollars, over nearly a decade on a complex municipal bond investment that it bought in the run-up to the 2008 financial crisis. And they failed to confront head-on, even as the markets were upended and regulations tightened. The loss, which hasn't previously been reported, represents one of Deutsche Bank's largest ever from a single wager, roughly quadruple its entire 2018 profit, and ranks as one of the banking industry's biggest soured bets in the last decade. The prolonged struggle over how to handle the investment sheds light on cultural and financial challenges inside one of Europe's biggest banks that have hampered its ability to compete with stronger U.S. rivals. Deutsche Bank resisted for years reducing the value of those bonds and related derivatives on its books to a level that markets suggested they were worth. And the company brushed aside concerns raised by the bank's financial auditors about how it was valuing the trade. That, according to internal bank documents and people involved in discussions about the investment. Whoa. This is like, boom, mic drop stuff.
Can you imagine coming home and telling your spouse, yeah, I lost $1.6 billion on a single trade.
A decade ago.
A decade, yeah.
That's the killer, is that they actually discussed whether they should kind of fix the books to accurately reflect what had happened. And based on what we know now from these reports, they decided, nah, let's not go back. Let's just pretend. I don't know what they were thinking, because they do have auditors in place that gave them advice. They just chose not to follow it. Sounds like, based on what we're reading.
The bad news is I've been in meetings in my previous life with other people, big strategic meetings, and then I talk privately one-on-one to some of the people involved with similar cover-up type stuff. Not anywhere near this big, by the way, but generally, Bobby, the strategy is, I will be long gone by the time this becomes public. Mm-hmm. Somebody else is going to be left holding this thing. It's not me. And man, if we do something today, I'm going to take the brunt of this. I'm going to leave it for somebody else.
Yeah. And you wonder what kind of documentation will be uncovered as this investigation continues, because there are clearly some records of these discussions and these decisions that were made. And I don't know what the consequences will be, but it certainly, I hope, will get more attention and will be a warning to people that, not to always just trust the companies will do what appears to be the right thing.
Let's do a couple things here. The first thing, there might be a lot of people, this is in the municipal bond market, and a lot of people might not even know what municipal bonds are. And there may be other people that think, well, it's municipal bonds. How can you lose that much money in municipal bonds? So maybe let's go through that first. I'll take the the first part, just a municipal bond. Municipal bonds where you're loaning money to a city. So a stock is where you own a part of the company. You become a part owner. A bond, you're loaning money out. So municipal bond, you're loaning money to a city. The cool thing is that, cool being the technical term, is that if a lot of these bonds are tax-free. Sometimes if you have a state tax, sometimes the state tax-free as well if it's in your state. That's not true everywhere. But so you get some great tax write-offs. Also, a lot of cities have good credit ratings. And so because of that, this seems like pretty safe projects that you're putting money into. And so people do these for safety, which makes you think you can't lose a lot of money because you loan money to a municipality. And by the way, the downside of municipal bonds, because they're considered so safe, they are then able to offer a lower interest rate. They know they can get people to invest in them because of the perceived safety of these investments. So because of that, the exchanges, you know, if I don't have to offer a high interest rate, why would I? Because that's like interest on your credit card, right, for them. So if they can pay a lower interest rate and get away with it, they do. So municipal bonds, usually a very low interest rate, but generally considered safe.
But they haven't always been safe. We've had situations where towns have literally gone bankrupt. And then it becomes a very complicated thing because you may not be the first in line as a creditor. So things, for example, were incredibly complicated with Puerto Rico when they've had their troubles. It's still evolving what's going on, but there were a lot of different kinds of municipal bondholders and different kinds of investors. And it really depended. You had to literally know what you owned because they were not all the same. And that determined where you were in the pecking order of getting anything back. And a lot of that investment really went up in smoke. That was a really disastrous situation.
Yeah, that's a great, great lesson is just because you think that you're in a type of investment that's considered safe doesn't mean that they all are. There's still some homework that you need to do. And if Deutsche Bank can mess this up, pretty easy for you to mess up too.
Yeah. And also some muni bond issues are tied to specific projects. It might be you are buying a muni bond tied to this. We're going to build this bridge or something like that. Or it's going to be tied to sales tax. So it's important to literally understand the specifics of what you are buying.
Apparently this was a bridge over some swampland.
Apparently. I don't know. We don't know the full details of that. But as I said, there's a very expanded article in the Wall Street Journal. Look for the one from Gretchen Morgenson. She's a great reporter. And the other author, I'm sorry, is Jenny Strausberg. I'm sure they will keep reporting on it and digging up more information for people to fully understand what happened. But I think the more fascinating part of the story is the fact that they were in denial, that they weren't doing anything about it for a decade. I mean, look, a bad investment has happened to so many banks. In fact, some banks went out of business because of rogue traders, and that's unbelievable. You've got this great institution. One bad apple brings the whole thing down. That can happen. What's unique here is they kind of buried it for 10 years.
You know, and if people are wondering what this has to do with you personally, I think all of us have been in situations where we've kind of window dressed stuff. We didn't make a move right away because we thought that it would take care of itself. And the bad news is, of course, as you know, Bobby, that things just don't magically get better. I'm thinking about a story I heard Jim McCann, the president or the chairman of 1-800-Flowers tell, which was a great lesson in this. He said that he was at a party and Jack Welch happened to be there and he had Jack Welch in a quarter.
And as said, we all do.
Yes. And goes, oh man, he goes, and I apologize, Jack, about talking about work. He goes, but I have a situation and maybe you can help me. And Jack was very polite and said, shoot. And Jim said, you know, we have this vice president at 1-800-Flowers. He's a very nice man. It just isn't working out. And we really, you know, we keep thinking that maybe if we give him some training, maybe if we, whatever, that it'll get better. And Jim said that Jack Welch, the former CEO of General Electric, just turned to him and said, you know what, Jim? I never once have had a time where if I waited for the situation to get better by doing nothing that it did. Like I never had a time when I let somebody go and said, oh man, if I'd let them go 6 months later, it would have been better. It's always better when you know what the move is that you need to make. Make it now. When I was doing public relations stuff, you know, one of the big things about public relations has always been if you know there's a problem, get out in front of it, right? Get out in front of the problem immediately, admit it, mea culpa, as quickly as possible so that there's no opportunity for others to, you know, come in and take shots at you.
Yeah, you got to own it. But that clearly didn't happen here. But I think with us personally, it is a really good lesson that if you make a mistake, get on top of it right now and course correct and get a new start right away.
There's our takeaway.
Yeah.
Into the big idea here in a second. Or we want to say hello to everybody on Twitter. Let's do that on Twitter. What am I talking about?
On Twitter.
Here on Facebook.
That's with Elon Musk's tweets now.
Yes. Let's say hello to some of these people and see what everybody's saying. Rebecca says, how do all the state and city bankruptcies affect munis? Good question. If you invest, Rebecca, in any of these city projects and they go bankrupt, you lose your money. So it can, Bobby, it can be a horrible thing.
You're a creditor.
Yeah, you can be in the wrong place. Tim says, was Deutsche Bank loaning money to cities in California? How else could they lose? There's lots of issues. And Jim is here. Jim says, Deutsche Bank has had lots of trouble lately. At least losing this money wasn't illegal. Well, it wasn't illegal yet, Bobby.
Right.
I think the jury's going to be out. Maybe it's not illegal, but I can totally see a class action shareholder lawsuit here coming.
Well, this goes to disclosure. I mean, it's not illegal to make a bad bet, but it is illegal, I would think, to not disclose your actual financials. And by not disclosing this, it's one thing even to make a mistake, but they knew about this. And this went on for a decade. It was suggested that they correct their financials and go back and do that. And based on what we know now, again, everyone gets their day in court, but we don't know that it'll go to court. I'm not saying that, but based on what we know now, they did not correct when they knew the information that they were presenting to investors was not fully correct. And that's definitely not good.
Yeah, Paul says, if it wasn't illegal, there shouldn't be an issue. Move on. Nothing to see. LOL. But but even if it wasn't illegal, the issue is it's material for shareholders to trade on. And if you're a public company and you're withholding material stuff that traders can make decisions on, then Houston, we have a problem. Dylan says, my favorite headline from Bloomberg on this was Deutsche Bank lost some money sometime.
That's a good one. We didn't see that.
It is so true.
I didn't, at least.
We should have led with that had we seen it.
Yeah, we didn't see that one. I was searching for $1.6 billion, I think, so I didn't see that one.
We'll end this on Mike's. Mike says, that's like $1.6 billion sausage McMuffins with cheese, lost, gone. Inflation adjusted like over 2 billion McMuffins in today's McMuffins.
Okay.
That's good.
I don't know what to say to that, but okay. Right. Thank you for the comment.
Good place to leave it. Are you talking about Tiller now?
Yeah, we're going to talk about Tiller because the important thing is to have correct numbers. If we can be really subtle about it, Joe, I think it's really important to know your numbers, face the truth, and be organized. And that way, when you need to show someone, like your accountant or your shareholders, in the case of Deutsche Bank, the public, you can at least be accurate. So Tiller helps you manage your money 10 times faster with things like spreadsheets from Google Sheets and Excel. So you can track your daily spending, all the transactions, balances, basically know your numbers, be accurate. It's a good thing. All from Tiller.
Head to stackybenjamins.com/Tiller, T-I-L-L-E-R, if you want to check it out. And if you use that link, that helps us keep podcasting. So thanks for doing it.
All right. Time for the big idea, Joe.
We got one. Mike thinks he knows what the big idea is. He says, don't tweet and share info too early and don't withhold either. It's like have the information at the right time. We might go a different way.
Maybe.
Yeah. You ready?
But that was something we actually did think about, basically. But maybe not exactly, Mike.
We did. I think our big takeaway here, Bobby, is this. You know, I love last year's movie about P.T. Barnum. And I thought that was a fantastic film. But I also think that P.T. Barnum is absolutely fantastic when it comes to making things look great. But the truth is that marketing and the truth are often two totally different things. We've seen it a lot. The MoviePass looked like a fantastic thing, and yet MoviePass wasn't at all profitable and was recently delisted. And even though it's still around, you can still use your MoviePass. We saw on that long, slow decline that we talked about here on this show for the good last 6 months, that was absolutely, absolutely horrible. So when it comes to making your investment decisions, just because something sounds good doesn't mean that you don't need to go back into the numbers. And also when it comes to Deutsche Bank, a lot of window dressing going on. Don't get caught up in saying, no, if we just PT Barnum this, it's going to get better. I think face reality. Yeah, face reality the way that it is.
And listen to Jack Welch. It's not going to get better, as we said earlier.
That's good. Do it, Bobby.
This is great, Joe.
Yeah. So let's go stack some Benjamins. That's mine. We'll see you back here next time, Bobby.
Yes. And if you want to live a rich life, you got to be financial grown up. See you guys.
The show is created by Joe Saul-Sehy, hosted and produced by Bobby Rebell and Joe Saul-Sehy, is engineered by Caden Thompson, and all put together by a pack of well-trained ferrets down here in Joe's mom's basement. You'll find Bobby at the Financial Grown-Up Podcast and Joe at the Stacking Benjamin Show. Go say hi to them there, too. Online, visit us on Twitter at @AverageJoeMoney and at Bobby Rebell, or come join a live recording at our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/iStackBenjamins. I know you already know this too, but Money in the Morning is for entertainment purposes only. You should not act on anything recommended by a bunch of entertainers in a basement or even a Manhattan kitchen without first consulting your financial advisor. And second, dude, have your head examined. Have headlines you'd like us to discuss? Send them to joe@stackingbenjamins.com or put them on our Stacking Benjamins closed Facebook group. This show is a collaboration of Stacking Benjamins LLC and BRK Media LLC, copyright 2019, all rights reserved. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I reserve the right to always say, we'll see you next time back here on Money in the Morning.